We're going to take one more item before we break for lunch. That'll be Timberline, Virginia Timberline LLC. Throw it at me. That'll work. Thanks, Sean. Have a good day. Thank you. Those that remain here, we'll be breaking for lunch after this case. Don't expect it to take over probably 10 to 15 minutes, maybe a little longer, and we'll be breaking for 45 minutes thereafter.
Handed the commissioner the VIMS. It's not really a VIMS report. It's a VIMS letter. This is not a traditional case where we've got an application and there's recommendations. It was not available at the time the eval was done. We did receive it at the end of last week. This is a hearing concerning the Virginia Timberline LLC violations of the Code of Virginia, more specifically disturbance and alteration of subaqueous lands of the state within several title tributaries of Lawns Creek and Olive White County without any prior authorization. The project is located in the northern part of Olive White, actually right at the border between Olive White and Surrey. Lawns Creek actually forms the line between the two counties. This is a graphic representation of the actual subdivision. You may recall that we heard a previous case related to a outfall pipe for their sewage treatment facility, which was located on the upland here, and the pipe went down out to Lawns Creek. We also had a pier application, a community pier, which is located in this area. You will see that in one of the photographs later. That was a separate permit application, and that was approved and has been constructed. The area that we'll be looking at today related to this violation is basically this whole area that's labeled marsh here. This is basically the edge of the creek itself, the mouth being off the sheet here to the right, going upstream here. But basically this entire marsh area, some areas within all of this marsh area here. The property does terminate approximately here. There is a small area of land you'll see in the photographs that's actually owned by the state. It's part of the Cayman Inland Fisheries Wildlife Management Area, which primarily is located across the creek in Surrey County, but they do own the little point of land here, and I'll explain why I'm mentioning that later. But basically, this is the area, this is the subdivision, and there are additional lots on the James and some lots that face Lawns Creek, but this is a common area that's been designated that will remain with the eventually an association. It's currently still held by the developer. On June 22nd of 2006, we were notified by then Chief of Law Enforcement, Steve Bowman, who's now a commissioner, that there was a large excavator type of equipment in the marsh. He was in the commission plane, I believe, when he saw this, working along the marsh of Lawns Creek. Based on that information, staff flew the project on July the 12th, and these are the photographs we took on that date. This is not Lawns Creek proper that you see here. This is one of the tidal tributaries that feeds into Lawns Creek through this extensive marsh. You will see Lawns Creek in some of these photographs. As you can see, considerable amount of activity out here with a large piece of equipment, which I'll show you in a moment. Each one of these represents sort of a track of the vehicle itself, and you can see there are numerous crossings of subaqueous lands. Too numerous here to count them all, but lots of them. You'll notice some circular patterns. That's the actual mowing that was done. You'll see the piece of equipment. This is basically the equipment that was still on site when we flew. It was just parked in this little ravine area here. Again, you can see the numerous tracks, some of which cross tidal. This was not a low tide, but there is water in these guts at low tide. Again, a little broader view. This is Lawns Creek proper. This is going upstream in this direction. Again, numerous crossings of these little guts that run all through this marsh. Basically, this area to the right is the area that's owned by the Game and Inland Fisheries, but all of this area is owned by the developer. And you'll note there's a track here that goes around. You can't see it, but it actually goes all the way out to the James River. So there was at least one traverse where the guy drove out and wasn't even on their property. Again, just another example that shows pretty clearly the mowing activity, the circular swinging of a boom. And one more of those. These are ground shots that were taken on a meeting in July the 19th on site with representatives of Virginia Timberline. There were representatives from VIMS, Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, Department of Environmental Quality, and the County of Isle of Wight. Again, you can see some of the tracks. This is some of the unvegetated guts that run through here, and you can see the disturbances. This was taken from an upland lot. Again, quite a bit of disturbance. This is a fairly large piece of equipment. These shots were taken by boat at another site visit that we went in by watercraft, and you can clearly see the disturbance as they drove across this gut and into the marsh. This is a series here of photographs taken during that same. And it's mentioned in the eval about some mud wave issues. Well, this is where they crossed. This piece of equipment did make depressions in both the marsh and the subaqueous vegetated tidal area here. And you can obviously see the two tracks here where they went up into the marsh. Another example here. And here. And again here. This is the piece of equipment. It was brought in from Louisiana. It's a company called Marsh Buggies. It's the name of the company, so that's what we've called this apparatus, is a marsh buggy, for lack of a better term. But it's basically an excavator-type piece of equipment mounted on these tracks here. It was being taken off the day we did the site visit on the 19th. They had finished the work. We had stopped them, I guess, and they finished the work as well. Basically, these two angled areas fit right in here. And this is a big track, sort of like a bulldozer, that goes through the marsh. You can see the size of it based on the people walking between it. This is the mower head. This equipment, they can put excavator buckets on it, mower heads, any kind of thing that's hydraulically driven. And that's the cutter blade, and basically they just basically swing this back and forth. Apparently they use these in Louisiana quite a bit. This will give you an idea, I thought, of how this vehicle was sinking into the marsh and the subaqueous lands. There's basically mud all the way to the top, but there is sort of a darker line here, which would indicate, I think, an average depression in those areas. I'm going to stop here. These are photographs that were taken last month to just show you what it looks like almost a year later. But let me explain a little bit of what happened right after we discovered this activity going on. We did receive information once we met with the Virginia Timberline representatives that they had attempted to contact both the Army Corps and our agency related to this potential activity. They contacted the Corps in June and asked whether a permit would be required to mow the marsh in this location. They did call staff. I got a phone call from them, but did not indicate what the phone call was about at the time. I was processing both the pier permit, and I knew there was other permit activity related to the sewage treatment plant. We did call back a couple times. There was no one in the office. We got no answer, and we never heard any more from them specifically about this request until after it was discovered the activity was ongoing. The Corps, however, did issue there were some verbal communications, and there was an email eventually sent from the Corps, which is shown here, a quote from it in the email that basically says, "We do not regulate cutting of vegetation above the soil surface in a wetland area. However, it did further state, if you were instead bulldozing or excavating, that would be considered excavation and or fill activity under the Corps' jurisdiction and would require permit." Unfortunately, the Corps didn't go any further in the email and indicate that this type of activity might require additional permit authorization, from our agency, the local wetlands board in Isle of Wight, or the Department of Environmental Quality. I've noted the violations here that you see. They were documented on the site visits that I noted earlier. We did send a notice of violation on August 11th, indicating, and I quote, disturbances which included depressions and mudways of the tidal marsh and subaqueous lands along dozens of traverse lines made by the mowing equipment. We further noted there had been no permit issued for this activity by either BMRC or the local wetlands board. We did not afford Virginia Timberline the opportunity to submit an after-the-fact application in light of that we don't believe this type of activity would have been approved by either VMRC or the Wetlands Board had we known the type of equipment that would be used. Again, I flew the site approximately a month ago, and you can still clearly see a lot of the traverse lines. Again, this is looking, there's the pier that I mentioned earlier. So we're at this is basically the upper limits of where they mowed going out. This is the idle fleet out in the James River itself, and the mouth is off to the left here. I also went back the end of last week by a boat again just to see how things had recovered in approximately a year's time. Clearly, there's still, you know, some disturbance to the marsh that's kind of prohibiting the regrowth of the marsh grass, and obviously you can see the depressions here related to the marsh and the subaqueous land. And this is kind of a final one that I'll leave up. This was taken again last week, but basically I tried to draw a line here to show you that this would be more or less low water if this had not been disturbed. Obviously, this is a set of tracks right here where the equipment crossed this gut, and also probed this with a paddle. Basically, if you probe a paddle in here, it goes like this, and then you much deeper, and then back up, and much deeper. So there are still depressions within the subaqueous lands here at virtually every crossing. The Wetlands Board of Isle of Wight was informed of this, and as I said, we're at some of the site visits. They did take action. They initially took Virginia Timberline to court and the two misdemeanor charges. There was some negotiation, and in light of further enforcement action in court, the Wetlands Board approved a consent order with Virginia Timberline in March of this year, which basically said that they would not seek any further legal action if Virginia Timberline agreed to pay a $10,000 civil charge for the marsh disturbances. That agreement also included a statement that Virginia Timberline would restore at its cost the alleged violations along Lawrence Creek in accordance with any and all directives, requirements, or orders imposed upon them by the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality. DEQ is still in their final stages of a consent, or I believe it will be a consent order that they will negotiate with Virginia Timberline. I had anticipated that might be done before the meeting. I think it's taken a little longer to get the final legal details of that drawn out before the final negotiations are done with Virginia Timberline. But we decided to move forward because they were very close to their final action, and obviously this Isle of Wight agreement, they de facto agreed to adhere to any DEQ regulations in their agreement with the Wetlands Board. I handed out the Virginia Institute of Marine Science letter, which basically, that second short paragraph addresses the subaqueous issue, and they basically said that to go in and try to fix these depressions would probably cause more problems than it's already there, and to just allow them to try to recover on their own, which they will. These guts are typically what you see in creeks like this. It's a soft, muddy bottom, and it will probably eventually slowly fill in over time. So our summary and recommendation, while we believe Virginia Timberline LLC did make some attempt to seek permit guidance related to this activity, we do not believe they could reasonably assume the amount of disturbance in these environmentally sensitive areas would not require additional authorizations from the same agencies for which they were already working on a number of other permits, for the activities at the site. We further believe that to attempt to restore the non-vegetated sabbaceous lands and associated mudflats to their original contours would result in even more disturbance. Over time, these areas should slowly recover and return to pre-disturbance elevations. Therefore, we do recommend the Commission consider an appropriate civil charge based upon environmental impact, significant environmental impact, and a major degree of noncompliance in lieu of any further enforcement action. And I will make one more statement, because I'm sure someone's going to ask me the question, why did they mow the area?
I was going to ask them that under oath, quite honestly.
Well, I can wait and let them explain it, but that question was asked pretty quickly when we all met with them. They were in the process of selling these lots, and the indication to us was that they mowed the marsh at this location. Let me go back to... The lots that face this marsh, a lot of them were not sold at this time, that they were having a big sales weekend coming up, and that they basically mowed this area to increase the site vistas out to Lawns Creek to make the lots more attractive. That was the rationale that we got. They may be able to elaborate on that further.
Put the next slide back up.
The upland lots basically stop at this bluff area. And this is a common area that will be held, I think, eventually by the Homeowners Association as a natural area. But the rationale was that, you know, when they brought people out, I think, to look at these lots, and you can walk right down, you know, to this is upland. It goes up pretty quickly. And look out to the creek, that this would be, you know, a better view.
Okay. Any questions of Mr. Stagg? Mr. Tankard?
When you say significant environmental impact and major degree of noncompliance, what kind of dollars do you think?
We're going to discuss that here.
Well, you have your matrix, so.
There's a matrix.
I've discussed it with counsel. That's why I had that put up on the board. It's a $10,000 maximum civil charge. However, each one of those tracts, I've been informed, represents an individual encroachment. So if we need to take a pointer and scale it and do whatever we have to, each one could represent $10,000, as I've been informed by counsel. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Stagg. Is someone here from Timberline? Is Timberline represented? Raise your right hand.
My name is Chip Watkees.
Do you solemnly swear the testimony that's about to be given will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
State your name again for the record.
Chip Watkees.
Where are you located, sir? Where's the office located?
I live in North Carolina. My office is in Greenville, North Carolina.
Address, please.
150 East Arlington Boulevard, Suite E.
Thank you. The floor is yours as to explain why, in this situation, you did what you did.
I work in our North Carolina office. I recently took over the Virginia office in Lawns Point.
How long ago?
October, November.
After this occurred?
Oh, yes.
Where's the person now that was responsible for this?
Everyone in the Virginia office was terminated.
Okay. That's a start.
Yeah, well, as far as rationale, I don't see any. There's no question, self-explanatory. By no means did our company intend to do anything like this. We had our agreement with the county, which, you know, we paid a $10,000 civil penalty. I don't know how you're going to look at it.
I'll look at it like that.
Right. But
and I don't mean to be flippant. I really.
Absolutely.
That is in, quite honestly, in an area that I'm very familiar with.
Right.
And I know how beautiful a marsh it is, how pristine it is, and to mow vistas simply to up the price because you're having a fire sale of the lots is intolerable.
I'm assuming that's what Dan was doing when he did it. Like I said, I ran our North Carolina office. I'm working very well with Isle of Wight County, Beverly, and Kim Hummel, and trying to get this project back into the way it's supposed to be. Like I said, they've been fired. I don't know why they did it. They, of course, did try to make an attempt, supposedly.
I'm not buying into that program either. You can call this office anytime you want to, and you can get me on the telephone.
Right. And
so
that's right.
You know,
and again, I can't say that I wasn't with him, or that's just what his story is. So, I'm here with. I don't know what to tell you.
Any questions from the commission?
How many acres are involved? What's the acres?
Let's go here.
Want to give me a shot, Mr. Surveyor, Benny?
They may know that area. They have a map that, because I was going to be as a natural area.
You
so
give
I
me
think it's defined. I apologize. I don't have
that's
a subdivision map.
That's all right.
There is a map, I think, that fixed that area, has an area on it, but the county has it, but I don't have a copy.
I don't have the actual acres. I have the linear footage of the track mark,
okay.
Which is 142,054 feet.
Divided by 5,280 is what?
Square a square foot?
Or linear?
That's linear.
No. This is linear feet.
It's linear feet.
You're trying to get miles of.
Yeah, I got you now. In other words, needless to say, it's a lot. I mean, that picture was taken at about between 500 and 700 feet altitude.
How many lots go along that line?
50 acres.
How many lots?
There are a total of 155 lots, and it's pretty much half and half on the James, and then she got 70 some lots.
75 lots or so.
60 to 70 on the creek.
And how much are they selling a piece for?
All depends on what day.
That is true. Originally, they were selling in the $300,000 to $600,000 range. Right now, they're selling in the $150,000 to $225,000 range.
Even at that, $10,000 is a bargain.
Well,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir, Mr. Robbins.
I have a question for staff, if I may. I'm just wondering if there was any consideration given to mitigation elsewhere in the watershed, since it appears that mitigation on site may not be viable, according to the Gunn's report.
And like I said, I'm not sure what DEQ may require related to particularly the marsh damage, but I don't think there's any on-site opportunity on this site to mitigate for the subaqueous impacts. And trying to fix these little depressions in the gut, we just didn't deem was worthwhile of the additional disturbance. So
I understand. And to follow up, are the only jurisdictional impacts before us those that are subaqueous, or are some of them also wetland?
The subaqueous, correct. Oh, the subaqueous. Wetlands Board and the County took care of the wetlands aspect.
Right. The DEQ is looking at the whole thing, you know, the tidal wetlands, the entire project.
Yeah.
And to clarify, when we heard the previous project about the outfall sewer, it was approximately 5,000 direct, as a crow flies, linear feet from that outfall pipe to Mr. DeMaria's lease, which extended up into the creek. So you're talking about, you know, a mile of a straight line from more or less.
Thank you. Excuse me.
Yes, sir, Mr. Tankard.
But at the same time, the Olivet County Board, Wetlands Board, asked for mitigation, which Vims is saying would not be a good idea, but yet if they did mitigate, the cost would be extraordinary. Are we going to take that into consideration?
I think. I'd like to hear from council, give us some guidelines and ideas.
Basically, we're talking at Code Section 28.2-1213C, which authorizes the commission to, with the consent of the alleged violator, to collect a $10,000 civil charge for each violation. What each violation means is subject probably to some debate and consideration, but the violations that occurred in this case are violations of Code Section 28.2-1203, which prevent that it shall be unlawful for any person to build, dump, trespass, or encroach upon or over basically state-owned bottomlands, which is what you've got up there, the subaqueous portion. And each time that there's a trespass over the subaqueous bottoms, it could conceivably be considered a violation. I would caution that that could be taken to the...
Question for you, sir. You.
Yes.
Do you know how many days this this buggy was under? Well, even if we don't go the extreme and start counting tracks, I think an appropriate measure under this, and Mr. Josephson, correct me if I'm wrong, from a standard perspective and from a provable standard, that the day that the buggy was in there certainly constitutes something provable as far as the violation is concerned. And I know, I would say with reasonable certainty that piece of equipment was in there at least 5 days. Think you have a problem?
No, I would point out that for the civil penalty aspects of it, which would be the alternative to collecting a consent civil charge, for the civil penalty, which is not to exceed $25,000 for each day of violation. So that would be considerably more.
Madam
Chairman?
Yes, sir. Dr. McConaughey.
Just a question for counsel. Besides a civil penalty, can we require them to do off-site mitigation as additional, or would that be part of the...
I'm not aware of any authorization to require... Well, there's a remediation aspect of, yeah, of staying on bottom lands, which I really haven't thought of before.
Do in lieu.
I think the commission could. In the past, there's been some effort and inducement to create oyster reefs, you know, out of shell as a out of kind, you know, mitigation. But based on the VIMS comments, and the fact that there's not really any subaqueous area similar to a wetlands bank, mm-hmm, you know, where one could buy credits or create additional submerged lands, I would be at a loss unless, you know, VIMS would have some recommendation as to what might be even suitable and or from a functional standpoint, what you'd be looking at from the standpoint of a square footage or things of this nature.
Well, what I was thinking was that it could be a wetlands in lieu of sub-bottom. Restoration of the sub-bottom required them to...
Well, wouldn't that happen?
The Wetlands Board really has addressed the wetlands impact. There's nothing to say that the commission couldn't impose functionally a mitigation requirement that included wetlands for subaqueous. I'm not sure what that ratio would be, and you tend then almost to be not duplicative, but getting into the area that has already been determined by the Wetlands Board. And we, in fact, reviewed at a staff level. We followed that process. We knew what the Wetlands Board was doing. You know, that's really not subject to commission review at this juncture.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Just as a matter of statutory authorization, I point to 28.2-1212D, as in Delta. If you have a receipt of a sworn complaint of a substantial violation, the commission may order that the affected site be restored to its previous condition if the commission finds that restoration is necessary to recover lost resources or to prevent further damage to resources. No. I think you have the legal authority, but I think you also have the recommendation.
Well, VIMS not to do that.
Not to do that.
I think it's one of those situations where, you would do more harm than you would good. Although it may take, as is pretty apparent, a number of years to get it back to where it was, because, I mean, that what was depicted in the last slide was clearly the two tracks of the mud buggy with the body overlaid. So how long it will take, who knows? But Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You were discussing earlier the number of days that the violations occurred. I note in Exhibit 3-8, the letter from the county of Isle of Wight, which indicates that, quote, in addition, your firm's representatives have admitted to improper cutting for 37 days, end quote.
Thank you for that research.
Mr. Commissioner.
Yes, sir. Mr. Fah, Mr. Schick.
Now, if there is no wet banks, isn't there a fund that they could pay into that would go to other in-kind in lieu of?
There's a wetlands mitigation banks. In lieu of planning, you pay. But that's, once again, wetlands. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, any civil charge that the commission would assess would, in fact, go into the waterways improvement fund,
right,
which could
right.
be used for habitat improvement,
right.
So, you know, things of this nature. So there's already a mechanism to accept and use those monies for that purpose. And as it turns out, the commissioner has been successful in getting approval for a position in the division, which will become effective on July 1st. We will be hiring someone to come up with a plan for the utilization of the waterways improvement funds, which include civil charges as well as the royalties, so that those monies can in turn be put back into habitat restoration. But we're really at the beginning of the advertisement hiring process and then the plan development.
And would there be any credibility to attaching some type of figure based on the number of lots that are?
I think Mr. Josephson would have a difficult time in court. What we're dealing with
either are days or
the days would be probably easier to substantiate than the cuts, because as you look at that picture,
right,
although they are separate trespasses, where do they begin, where do they end, and how much work would it do to do that? We're in a position where we have to balance the punishment to meet the crime, and no doubt in my mind this is a very, very serious, significant impact to some pristine area, but at the same time we have to be careful we don't go overboard and just be out of bounds by assessing what might be to some and what might not be to some an outlandish civil charge. So with that, the matter is before the commission.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Fox.
I guess I'll start. You had, 37 days and $10,000 a day, $370,000.
Actually, it's $25,000 a day, isn't it?
No, only if it goes. Only if they do not accept the civil charge, then it goes to court. Mr. Staggs, you have something?
I think Mr. Robbins was right in the quote, but my understanding, having been on the site and met with the parties that are no longer working for Virginia Timberline, the piece of equipment was probably there for 37 days, but I'm sure if this eventually goes to court.
There's just no way they were out there in that marsh 37 days.
No, it's my understanding, based on the testimony of the participants at the time, that the piece of equipment was broken part of that time. It broke down and was parked where you saw it in one of those photographs. The best I can recall, it was somewhere in the 8 to 12 days that the equipment might have been out there working. It may not have been working all day those days.
Does that sound closer, sir?
I'd just like to say I don't know where the 37 days or who from our company may have sent something to.
If you don't, sir, I don't. I don't mean to be flippant.
Idea. So, I don't know what those guys were thinking. That's why they're not with our company anymore. But, their incompetence, I'm sure we're going to pay something for it. But I ask that, to be reasonable.
That's what I'm trying to do. Mr. Robbins.
I have one more question for staff. This photograph that we're looking at, this aerial,
yes.
What percentage of the impact area does that represent? Is that a small snapshot of it, or is that all-encompassing?
Yeah, that's a pretty small snapshot.
So this goes on for another 1,000-plus feet, right?
Basically, we're talking, there's the pier location. And there are tracks. There were tracks right adjacent to the pier, going this direction all the way to the limits of their property. Now, not every area was disturbed, not every area was mowed, but there were quite a few.
I don't want to step on your toes, but
you're not. We want to get to
this is an actual photo of where we measured the tracks. That photo represents probably 95% of what was done, as you can see. All of us right here, and then you have the one track that goes all the way down and then comes back. But that's 90% of what was disturbed.
We'll have to keep this for 33 days.
Yes, sir.
Another question.
Question from Mr. McCluskey.
Can you contact your company and find out what kind of royalties they collected, what kind of income they got from this operation?
What kind of royalty?
Yeah, what did they get paid?
You mean the company that did that?
Timberline, yeah. No, Timberline.
Timberline didn't get paid.
No, Timberline is the ownership company. Yeah, this is a contracting company.
Well, who's the name of the contracting company?
The contracting company. I'm sure that there's a bill somewhere that I could get.
The company that did the work, I can tell you who they are, but they're in Louisiana.
You kind of tell.
I'm just trying to get it how many days they
sure, build them. No,
the name of the company is Marsh Buggies Incorporated, I believe. They brought this equipment up on a tractor trailer in Louisiana.
Contact the State Corporation Commission about them, Carl. Tell them we don't want them in Virginia anymore. Doing this type of thing without a permit.
You can send a complaint.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Fox.
Everything's gotten quiet here.
I think your colleagues are analyzing the photograph, but go ahead, sir.
Seems to me I fall back. The only number we can hang a hat on is 37 days. And very honestly, I'm disappointed the math comes out as low as it does, because I think there was more damage done than $370,000. I'll make a motion that we move forward with staff's recommendation with the civil charge to be negotiated. It's $370,000.
Was that staff's? Just want to make sure.
Feel this, Bob?
I don't know that we anticipated exactly that it would be treated this way, as by days or by numbers of violations. I mean, we did discuss that a little, but the recommendation I think we were was just we're treating it as a violation.
Okay,
a
violation. That's fine.
Right, and in with the understanding
that whatever the commission does, the first priority is that in fact the violator at Timberline would have to agree, you know, to the fee. We have had discussions with Ms. Marina Phillips, who's Virginia Timberline's local attorney with Kaufman and Knowles.
Okay.
She was faxed a copy of our evaluation yesterday morning when it became available to the public. She broached the question as to whether under the matrix, and you'll notice that we left unanswered the per violation, whether it was per day in its entirety or per crossing. She did say that she was unable to attend this morning. I'm not sure what the gentleman, you know, will do in relation to Mr. Fox's motion in the event it were to garner a majority. However, she indicated that if the fee went more than $10,000, that she might be request a deferral, or she thinks the applicant might request a deferral in order to argue that particular case. Like I say, I'm not sure whether the gentleman at some point, you know, was prepared to do that, but I wanted you to be aware that, in fact, their legal counsel on this particular issue was going to ask, you know, for possibly a 30-day deferral to discuss those monetary issues.
So the bottom line is he could come down here and agree up to $10,000. After that, he wanted to deferral and discuss
it. I have no idea what.
I was under the impression that obviously we don't have a decision, but you all have to make one. But that there was some discussion that it was going to be treated as a violation, not 37 or not each crossing or however you determine it. So that it was one violation. That's what I came down here on. If it's more than one violation, then and it's going to be more than $10,000, then yes, you know, I'm going to need.
See, it's not new ground, but we have taken, based on the advice of the Attorney General, that in fact the leveling of a civil charge has to be mutually agreeable, and in and of itself, it's not appealable.
Right.
So if the commission were to take pass the motion, it's $370,000. The applicant were to say, well, I need to check with my corporate headquarters to see whether we'll agree to it.
All right.
That I don't know that decision is appealable, and the fallback would be then the commission pursues either a Class 1 misdemeanor under 28.2-03 or seeks civil penalties under 1213D. But it really puts us into a different area, and I just was not sure what his position was.
Okay, if this motion passes and they don't agree to it, it's a meaningless motion. I mean, it doesn't have to be appealed because it's not agreed to. The alternative would be to refer it to the Attorney General's office for prosecution of a civil penalty or enforcement of a civil penalty, or refer it to the eight local Commonwealth's attorney for prosecution as a misdemeanor.
Correct.
Or both. Conceivably both. I don't see that's double jeopardy.
Okay. That's fine. Matters before the commission.
Maybe,
I don't think we've had a motion.
Oh, there is a motion. I don't have a problem with seconding the motion, but I would like to maybe say that we may want to look at sending back to them that this is what we're thinking about doing, and somebody needs to come up before us that can make a decision.
Well, then in that case, we would have to continue it 30 days.
Right. Or, you know, or the other option is to say, you know, this is it, and, you know.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. And, by the way, these proceedings are recorded, so the council will be able to listen via computer to our sentiment, the way we feel. You not being a lawyer, I don't want you to be in a position to have to sit here and try to make decisions that you're not, number one, authorized to make and not, in the same condition I am, is not legally astute with a law degree to make. That's why I have my counsel over here. So I think, although we've had some lengthy discussion, and this discussion, as far as I'm concerned, that what we've had in the briefing and everything, I don't intend to go through it again. Now, if the lawyer, in all due respect, wants to come and argue based on what she's heard today, I have no problem with setting it down for 30 days and continuing it.
I agree.
I think that's the fair thing when you're talking about this much money. But make no mistake, I don't think that $10,000 is the cost of doing business in this program. I'll be quite honest with you. And I think it's a slap in the face to anyone that obeys the laws as they should. There's absolutely no excuse for that. And with that, the matter's continued 30 days. When I'll be adjourned for lunch.
This is okay.